This episode is sponsored by Celestron, manufacturer of high-quality telescopes and an industry leader in developing exciting optical products with revolutionary technologies.
I'm Kelly Beattie of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during May. This month we'll watch for crumbs from Halley's Comet, sync our calendar to the moon's phases, track down three evening planets, and take stock of bright stars in the late spring sky. So grab your curiosity and come along with me on this month's Sky Tour. Most of us know about Halley's Comet, and you might even know that it has a 75-year-long orbit. But this famous object hasn't been anywhere near Earth since the mid-1980s. In fact, right now it's out beyond Neptune and still moving away from us. The comet's turnaround back toward the Sun won't occur until late 2023. But each year about this time, planet Earth glides across the orbit of Halley's Comet, and when that happens, we run into rocky grit shed by the comet centuries ago. Those bits of Halley that slam into our atmosphere are tiny, most no more than 1/1000th of a gram. But they arrive at 66 kilometers per second. That's 148,000 miles per hour. That's a lot of kinetic energy, and it gets dissipated high in the atmosphere as brief shooting stars. Astronomers call this annual cosmic light show the Eta Aquariid meteor shower, because these crumbs from Halley's Comet appear to plow into us from the direction of the constellation Aquarius, and near one particular star named Eta Aquarii. The good news is that when the shower peaks on May 6th, moonlight won't be a problem at all. The bad news is that Aquarius isn't in the evening sky right now, and it's relatively far south in the sky. So to enjoy this shower, we'll need to get up really early, say around 3 a.m., to enjoy it in the couple of hours before dawn. If you're watching from a clear, super dark sky, you might spot a meteor every few minutes. Not an early riser? Well, there's still lots to see after sunset. But first, let's take stock of the moon's cycle of phases this month. During May, the moon's phases continue to parallel the calendar closely. New moon comes early, on May 4th. In the days afterward, the lunar orb materializes almost magically as a thin crescent in the evening sky, gradually fattening and drifting eastward until it reaches first quarter on the night of the 11th. This month's full moon, usually called the full flower moon by Native Americans, follows on May 18th. After that, moonrise happens later and later each evening, with last quarter falling on the 26th and rising after midnight. Now, pay close attention to the moon. As the hours tick by, you'll see that the moon and stars move east to west, left to right in the sky, all caused by Earth's rotation. But meanwhile, the moon itself is moving briskly in its orbit around Earth. So, from night to night, it appears to move eastward, toward the left in the sky, by a little more than the width of your clenched fist held at arm's length, passing stars and planets along the way. This orbital motion causes us to see more or less of the moon's sunlit hemisphere throughout a lunation. We say the moon is waxing as we gradually see more of it, and waning when the sunlit face is shrinking. And while the moon has a unique beauty all its own, stargazers cherish the time when it's not in the sky, because then more stars can be seen. During May evenings, we enjoy these moon-free windows during the first and last weeks of the month. Now let's track down some planets in the evening sky. Anyone hoping to see a brilliant planet in the sky right after sundown will be disappointed during May, but it's not a completely blank slate. Note where the sun sets, and as twilight fades, 45 minutes or an hour later, look above that spot for a medium bright star. That's Mars. It's sandwiched between the bright stars Betelgeuse to its lower left and Capella to its upper right. Early in May, the red planet pairs closely with an equally bright star nearby named Elnath. Can you tell them apart based on color alone? Mars, which is tinged with a hint of orange, is on the left. A few hours later, look across the sky at the eastern horizon, where giant Jupiter is making a grand entrance. We really can't miss Jupiter once it rises, because it's dramatically brighter than all the stars around it. This beacon rises a little earlier each night. It pops into view about 3 hours after sunset at the beginning of the month, but only an hour afterward by month's end. Next month, in early June, Jupiter reaches what's called opposition, sitting opposite the sun in the sky. By then, it'll rise at sunset and remain in view all night long. One other planet, Mercury, makes a brief appearance late this month. It's a little tricky to spot, and we'll need a viewing location with a totally unobstructed horizon toward west, plus a clear sky. Beginning May 28th, look right over the sunset point, starting about 30 minutes after the sun goes down. If you miss seeing Mercury, don't fret. It gets easier to spot in early June. We call ourselves stargazers, right? So next, let's go admire some of the evening's bright stars and constellations. At nightfall, the western half of the sky is littered with bright stars, so let's track some of them down. As we've seen, Betelgeuse and Capella are low in the west. Well to the left of Capella, and just as high up, is Procyon in the constellation Canis Minor, the little dog. Between them, and higher up, are the paired stars Pollux on the left and Castor, the twins of Gemini. These are the last vestiges of wintertime constellations that are past their expiration dates and sinking into the western twilight. Much higher than all of these, about two-thirds of the way to overhead, is Regulus, the alpha star in the constellation Leo the Lion. Regulus sits at the bottom of a star pattern called the sickle, because it looks like that old-time hand tool with a curved blade that we used to use to harvest crops. Regulus is at the bottom of the handle. Or maybe you'll see it more easily if you look for a question mark facing the wrong way. It's about the size of your clenched fist. The stars in the sickle trace out the head of Leo, Regulus marks the lion's heart, and its body extends off to the upper left. There's one obvious pattern that just about everyone knows, the Big Dipper. And to find it, all we have to do is turn to our left and look up, way up. We see the Big Dipper looming over us, with its curved handle bent upward and its four-sided bowl apparently overturned, as if dumping soup into some imaginary pot. Even though it's so well known, the Big Dipper isn't truly a constellation. It's what astronomers call an asterism, which is simply any group of stars that make a pattern. The Dipper is part of a larger constellation called Ursa Major, the Big Bear. Right now, this woolly beast is on its back, with the stars in the Dipper's handle serving as the bear's tail, the bowl marking its back, and its head off to the left. Most constellations and asterisms are chance alignments of stars that lie at different distances from Earth. But the Big Dipper breaks that rule. 5 of its 7 stars are equally far away, about 80 light-years from Earth. The 2 exceptions are at the end of the handle and on the lip of the bowl. What's more, these 5 stars are racing in formation across the sky at roughly 28,000 miles per hour. As a result, the Big Dipper's shape is very gradually changing. In 100,000 years or so, its bowl will flatten out and its handle will bend sharply. I think of the Big Dipper as the Swiss Army knife of the sky, because it helps me find so many other key springtime stars. For example, find the 2 stars at the left end, forming one side of the bowl. Sky watchers call these the pointer stars, and here's why. Draw an imaginary line through those pointers and follow that line downward by 3 fists. You'll come to a moderately bright star. That's Polaris, the North Star. We can use this little trick anytime we want. Just remember that those 2 stars point to Polaris. Are you surprised that the North Star isn't the brightest star in the sky? In fact, 45 other stars outshine it. But brightness isn't the North Star's claim to fame. Instead, it lies very nearly at the point where a line extended out into space from Earth's North Pole would go. So, as Earth spins throughout the night, Polaris hardly moves. Now, go back to the pointers in the Big Dipper. Follow that line through them in the opposite direction, up through overhead, and 4 or 5 fists later, you'll reach Regulus, that bright star in Leo. So now you can point to Polaris and leap to Leo. But wait, there's more. Follow the curve formed by the Dipper's handle until 3 fifths away, you reach a very bright star called Arcturus, high in the east. Arcturus is an ancient Greek star name that means watcher or guardian of the bear. So, congratulations, you now know how to arc to Arcturus. And did you know that you can even use the Big Dipper to tell time? It's really easy, actually. To find out how, go to skyandtelescope.com and type star clock in the search box. You'll find a do-it-yourself star clock that's just one of many features for beginning stargazers on Sky and Telescope's website. That's about it for this month. If you want more tips for viewing the night sky, check out Sky at a Glance on our website, which offers great star and planet gazing activities on a day-by-day basis. If you haven't already subscribed, you can find Sky Tour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. And please leave a rating or a review. It'll help others find the show. And if you want to explore the solar system and universe more deeply, please do check out the full line of binoculars and telescopes available at Celestron.com. Sky Tour is a production of F&W Media Studios and is produced by me, Kelly Beatty. Our executive producer of podcasts is Jared Mayer. Join me next month when we'll explore the stars found in and near the celestial Scorpion. Until then, I wish you clear skies.